You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. In today's episode, Reggie explores how we can connect with the fire of creativity in meditation practice by boycotting our impulses and waiting for true perception to arise. We discover a depth of genuine creativity that is unlimited. This talk was given in 2009 at a weekend retreat held in Portland, Oregon.
So, always when we're doing this kind of work, it's helpful to be very practical and concrete in the practice. And the more we understand the details of the practice, the better. And then, of course, we need to explore for ourselves. And at the same time, we need to understand the framework and the largest context of what we're doing. And the reason for that is that the view, you know, of people and human life and reality that we encounter in the modern period is so inaccurate to the actual situation that we have to ask a lot of questions that usually don't get asked about who we are and why we're here and how things work. So I thought I would talk about meditation, what's called meditation in action, or we're on the cushion and we're practicing, we're lying down, we're practicing, but what about our daily lives? And what I'm going to say is really sort of the end point. And then, you know, we can kind of see where we're going. In daily life, we need a lot of guidance, obviously, in our lives. And as we've been saying, we're not going to be able to obtain that guidance from external sources. I mean, there can be some guidance, you know, from the community, the sangha, the teacher, the lineage, whatever the practices is, you know, that we are showed. But the real guidance has to come from a much more unconditioned place. And in daily life, you know, when we're moving through our day, we become more and more sensitive to when we are operating just out of our own ideas. We begin to feel the space is shutting down, and meantime we start spinning. Now, you know, most of us do this all the time. We don't notice it. But as we practice, we begin to notice the difference between really being tapped in to reality and then when we're not tapped in, when we're just doing our own little, you know, wishful thinking or our own paranoid fantasies and trying to make those happen. We're kind of working with things. We're, you know, at work or with our families or whatever it may be, with our friends. And we see that suddenly we're disconnected, then we simply open down into the earth the way we did this morning. And we're going to kind of explore how that works. You know, we're sitting up this afternoon a little bit. We go down into the earth, we go to the point of infinity. And now I understand, you know, when I first teach this practice, a lot of times people, you know, they don't really exactly know what I'm talking about and they find that they can't really do it. But it's important to know that that's just, you know, it's transitory, it'll pass, and through doing it, you will eventually be able to go down into the earth quite easily, and then it'll actually become a resource. It'll be a place you want to go, and a place that you sort of intuitively know when you need to go there. So as that ability develops, and you begin to feel you're locked up, you go down into the earth to the point of infinity, which means you go down, down, down with your imagination, and then at a certain point, you let go of your imagination. You let it go, and you let it go down. Your awareness goes down through your imagination, so there's no more imagination. I said this morning, it's sort of like a, I don't know if I use the word whiteout, but it's a little bit like that, that suddenly you've lost any sense of anything at all. There's just this space. And in fact, you can't even really call it space. It's something else. And that's deep space. In the Vajrayana, we talk about deep space and deep time. And the deep space, that's the deep space. And there are two interesting things about it. One is it's completely unconditioned. There are no conditions whatsoever on it. It's not conditioned. It's beyond causes and conditions completely. And the other thing is that's where everything that is going to come to birth is held. It's held there. It's, you know, I was saying this morning, it's the origin of the source. And that's where we get the information. And the way you work with it is you go to the place and you empty out and you let go. You hang out there and you wait. And, of course, whenever we're involved in situations, there's a lot of impulsiveness that goes on with us. We have sort of impulsive reactions, which are ego-driven. They look like they're instinctive, but they're not. They're actually ego-driven. It's impulse. It's a very rudimentary level of ego trying to protect itself. So we hang out, and then there's this desire to act, to do something. I got to do something. You know that feeling? It's very hard to wait. But the thing is, when that comes up, you go deeper. And you just wait. And you wait through your impulses. And at some point, you see what needs to happen. And the seeing has nothing to do with your ego. It has to do with an accurate perception of the situation and where the situation needs to go. And this brings up another very important point, you know, in terms of our work, which is when we're in the world and we're with some particular circumstance, people or whatever it may be, our first thing is that we want to impose our version on it. We want what we think should happen. We want that to happen, and we even try to make it happen. And we become very manipulative, and in its worst forms, it's become sort of devious. But we're trying to make something happen. We're trying to get people to be a certain way or have a situation turn out the way we want it to turn out. And when we go into deep space and we open in that way and information comes, what we realize is that situations actually are in movement always. They're always giving birth. You know, a moment in a relationship gives birth to the next moment. And has nothing to do with ego. It has to do with the natural flow of the world. It's you know, the dance of reality, the play of reality, that there's always movement, always motion, and things are always going somewhere. And so our task, you know, as meditators, is to allow that information to come up of what needs to happen and to sort of go along with the direction of the world. So there's no interference of ego here at all. Ego serves what we've seen, like we were talking about this morning. That's a really important point. The ego's job is to serve the insight about what needs to happen. And as long as ego does that, ego is completely healthy. And the interesting thing about what needs to happen is what we call that in our world is creativity. We call that being genuinely creative, which doesn't mean sort of what we sometimes think of as just kind of being doing things and kind of being crazy and kind of doing things that nobody expected. That's not real creativity. Real creativity can only come from the earth. It can't come from human ideas or projects or ambition. It's only when we touch the deep space, the space that's beyond space and time, the origin of all things, and we learn how to wait. We wait out our impulsiveness, and then things arise, and if we go along with them, we see them and go along with them, that is genuine creativity. And that creativity can happen in the healing room. You know, if you're an acupuncturist, you see, you go along with the process, you know, you become a very skilled healer, because it's not you. It's the earth, the energy of the earth. Because the earth always tends toward healing and wholeness and integration and completion. The earth always tends that way. I mean, it's giving birth to bring things to fruition, of course. When an oak tree grows, it doesn't grow up and then grow back down again and then grow back up again. An oak tree is always moving toward its own completion, its own fulfillment. So working that way with the earth, we become the vehicle of creativity. It's not that we are creative, because the ego cannot be creative, because the ego is always working on a different level. You know, it itself is not the source of the primordial. But if it serves the primordial, then that's how creativity happens. And when we learn, like if we're painting and we learn how to use colors, how to increase our own sensitivity and how to translate that, all those techniques then come into play in this process. And certainly the really creative people that we know through history report this exact process that I'm talking about. Now, it's not like they went into the earth, but somehow they had a way of opening to deep space and waiting and then letting come through what comes through. You know, so creativity comes, it can be everywhere. It can be in how you're relating to a child. It can be in cooking. It can be in the arts. It can be in simply talking to a friend. It can be in literally any sphere of human activity whatsoever can be the arena for a tremendously fresh and transformative creativity. And the interesting thing about creativity is there's many stories of the Siddhas, these Indian Vajrayana people, both men and women, who lived between the 5th and the 12th century in India. And they were ordinary people like us. They were householders. And there are many stories told about them that even in the most menial tasks, for example, there's somebody named Chamaripa who was he made shoes out of leather, which is a very actually low caste, very low profession. And it's not like, you know, you have a selection. Like the man made one kind of shoe his whole life. That's all he did. And it's said that because of what we're talking about here, the depth of creativity that was able to flow through him, making the same kind of shoe over and over and over, that's actually how he taught his students, and that's how he liberated people. Because when you're in the presence of genuine creativity, there is a moment when you're free. It communicates to you, it frees you. So creativity is, it's not an artistic thing. It's not like aesthetic, it's spiritual, genuine creativity. What it's doing is it's showing within the conditioned and fallen world, so to speak, a genuine moment of purity and utter goodness. And that changes people. So when we do the body work, all of this is at stake. And it's just very, very interesting how it works. And the implications are really infinite. They're unlimited. I've noticed that, you know, among my students are artists and poets and writers and also actors. And a number of the actors, and we're talking about Broadway, TV, and film. And they don't necessarily talk to each other about this, although they must, I guess. But all of them have said that they use, you know, the belly breathing we did? Everybody figured it out. I mean, this wasn't something I suggested. They figured out that before they would go on stage or before the camera would start rolling, they would do the belly breathing a couple of times as a way to prepare for the scene. And when you're doing the belly breathing, all of a sudden, if you were nervous, you can't even, it's like you're not there. That's not happening. Something else is happening. And then when you go into the scene, you're right there. And it doesn't matter how much pressure is going on, you're right there. And that's a metaphor, I think, for all of us in our lives, that, you know, these different practices, the belly breathing is something, I mean, obviously when you're on the set, you're not going to lie down and start, you know, breathing into the earth. But the belly breathing, you can do that. And then you can extend down once your energy system is open. So very, very practical techniques to help us in our lives and help us really unlock really what we want, because we want to be creative people. We want the originality of our person to be able to be expressed. And the reason we want it is because that's why we're here. We are here, you know, as humans, as opposed to being trees or rocks or chipmunks. We're here because that's what humans do. They come and they are unique unto themselves, and they have something to express to not just to the human world, but mainly to the human world. They have something unique to express, and that's actually needed within the dance of reality. You know, we are called and want to be ourselves. We want to be seen by others, and we want to be recognized for what we do, not out of ego reasons, although there could be an ego overlay, but all of those things are very fundamental to the human person, and rightly so. They have to do with our whole mission as humans for being here. So this kind of creativity is something that we actually need to connect with. It's not an elective choice for us. It's a need to be who we are. We need to be creative in this particular way. We need to give the earth a way to express itself, its creativity, through us. We need to be seen by others. We need to, you know, show other people who we are. That's how we grow, and that's how we help other people. So, yeah, I just wanted to mention this aspect of the process. And then there's one other thing I'll just mention briefly. When you teach, when you're teaching, it's a slightly different thing, which is going up. And in the same way that we can go down into the earth and sort of exit from the realm of time and space, we can also go up. We go up to the top of the universe, you know, as far as we can go. And then in the same way, we let go upward. And I don't know why. I don't know why. What happens with me is I kind of stumble on things, and then I have to think about them. Like, oh, that's interesting. Now, what does that mean? Sometimes it takes me years to figure it out. This one I don't understand, but it happens. You go up to the top of the universe and you let go upward into that same beyond time and space, that same deep space up, and somehow it connects you so you can teach. And you're teaching from the earth at that point and from the sky. It's not like the sky alone at all, but you're teaching the earth and the sky come together, and then the teaching happens. But, you know, the teaching isn't, you know, it's like this whole process with all of us. It's not personal. Teachers, when they teach in that way, it's not them at all. It's not them at all. And it's this thing that happens. It's interesting that a number of my students are starting to experience this, and it's quite shocking because they thought it was me. And now they find it's not me. And it's also not them, which is also shocking. So, yeah, interesting point.
Download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Kechog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.